The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Joining us now, Ben Klein. He was a House of Delegates member. Now, Ben is a congressman-elect from Virginia's 6th District. That is kind of the, what is that? It's kind of Roanoke and Lynchburg. It goes out there a little bit southwest, kind of in between the 5th and the 9th. Pretty big landmass. Ben Klein with a big victory on Tuesday. Congressman-elect Ben Klein, great to have you, man.
John, thanks for having me. It's always good to be on the show.
You were a sea of cheer in an otherwise Virginia debacle, losing the 7th, the 2nd, and the 10th, your caucus shrinking by 3. Ben, how did you pull off this victory?
Well, it was a great team effort. We had a great team. It was a grassroots effort. We talked about the issues that were important to the voters. We talked about jobs. We talked about the economy, the great job that our president's doing, cutting taxes and spurring manufacturing growth. But we also talked about the need to have immigration reform and the need to make sure that we have energy reform so that we're energy independent, not relying on Middle East dictatorships. So we talked about the issues that were important to the voters, and they hurt us, and there was never a more broad choice between me and my opponent. I mean, my opponent was Bernie Sanders, socialized medicine. She was all about how much the government can get involved in your life and take more of your money and make more decisions for you. And I'm more about freedom and liberty and opportunity, and the voters chose freedom.
Well, and they chose it big. So first, let me say happy Veterans Day to all you veterans out there. And we always love celebrating Veterans Day. And secondly, Ben, congratulations on a great victory. And that race was never in doubt. I know you never stopped working. And even though you were 10 up, you ran like you were 10 down. And it really showed on Tuesday night, right?
Well, that's what you got to do. And my colleagues in Virginia, you know, Morgan Griffith came through with a huge victory, 65-35, just put a whomping on his opponent. And Rob Whitman did a great job. And Denver Riggleman, who's going to be a freshman with me, is I'm so proud of him and pleased that he's going to be there alongside fighting for liberty and fighting for freedom. And those districts where the Democrats may have temporarily won a seat, you know, there was a lot of talk, just like the Democrats are talking now, about how, oh, Virginia's changing, and oh, we're taking over, and oh, this is a permanent situation. And his name was Tom Perriello. And 2 years later, he was gone. So I think as long as we keep talking about what Republicans stand for, I think we'll be able to win several of those seats back in 2 years.
You know, I really hope so. Look, if you look at the 7th, Abigail Spanberger is a really great candidate, probably the best candidate maybe the Democrats put up in the United States for the House of Representatives, Ben, as a challenger. That's going to be tough to win back just because of changing demographics of that district. Chesterfield going Republican now for the 2nd cycle straight, as you know, and the lead for the Democrats in Henrico getting bigger. So that's going to be tough. The 2nd district, look, Scott Taylor should never have lost that race. And he did by making mistakes. And it's a self-inflicted wound. So I see that is probably the biggest potential pickup you have. Spanberger is just going to be really tough to beat. She raised $12 million. She'll raise it again. So she's going to be tough. Let's get to your new role, Ben. Talk about that a little bit. What you're going to have to make is who to vote for minority leader, Jim Jordan or Kevin McCarthy or others that may run. Have you made a commitment there, or do you lean one way or the other?
Well, right now I'm anxious to get up there and meet my colleagues, and I've spoken to McCarthy and Jordan both during the campaign. They were both very helpful, and so I'm looking forward to joining the Freedom Caucus and working to make our caucus more conservative and stand up for the values that we campaigned on. You know, voters don't want to send us up there to, you know, talk one way during the campaign and then vote another way on bills when we get there. So I'm anxious to get up there and lead the conservative charge alongside Mr. Jordan and Mr. McCarthy and other members of the Freedom Caucus like Morgan Griffith.
So, Congressman-elect Ben Klein, would it be safe for me to then assume, if you're joining the Freedom Caucus, which is one of the things that you pledged in your campaign, and I appreciate your following throughout that, would it be safe to then make the assumption, if you're joining the Freedom Caucus, you're likely to back Jim Jordan for minority leader?
Well, I want to back the person who's going to lead us to the majority. And so Jim Jordan has done a great job with the Freedom Caucus. He was one of the founders, and mm-hmm. and Meadows, I think, is the chairman of the caucus now.
Right.
So I'm anxious to talk to him. I haven't gotten the chance to talk to him yet as well. But no, I'm anxious to get up there and meet my colleagues, and we're going to do that this week in orientation and hopefully get on the path to making Nancy Pelosi a one-term speaker.
Well, we call her right now Rent-a-Speaker. You know, Ben, when you look at this politically, we're with Ben Klein, Congressman-elect Ben Klein, newly elected Republican congressman from the 6th District of Virginia, replacing the retiring Bob Goodlatte, who was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Congressman-elect Klein, when you look at the makeup of this, you have 202 seats in the House that the Republicans won. The way I see it is I don't see any of those at risk with Trump on the top of the ticket in 2020. I don't see any, because it's like the Democrats really picked off everything that they were likely to win up and down. Now, they had some upsets, like, you know, the you could call the second in Virginia was an upset. I think pretty much people expected that Barbara had a tough re-election ahead of her because of that situation in Northern Virginia. But I don't see a single Democratic gain in the 202 seats that you have. The Democrats have an 11-seat majority. Of those 11 seats, you know, there's 15 seats that Democrats won where Trump carried the district in 2016. So I could really see a scenario where the Republicans take the House back immediately. No?
Absolutely. I think we got nowhere to go but up from this setback with Trump on the ballot. The reason that we lost 15 House seats last year in the Virginia House was because the Democrats turned out and they were mad, and Republicans didn't turn out. And we needed our the folks who supported Trump to get reengaged in an off year. This year we did better. You know, we turned out halfway between normal midterm and presidential term numbers, but we still need to do better. And with Trump on the ballot, I think we've got nowhere to go but up, and we will win back the majority in 2 years. And it'll be a more conservative majority because we had a lot of retirements of moderate members. A lot of moderate members got beat in the general. So I think we've got great opportunity to set ourselves on the right course. If we can just articulate, you know, in a positive way where we want to take the caucus, where we want to take the country, and that's what we've been doing at the state level. We've been trying in our conservative caucus and what our Freedom Caucus needs to do as well.
Well, look, I'm glad you're there, and I know, Ben, having worked with you a long time, you're going to shake things up and you're going to stand true to your values as you have always done. And I look forward to you being a regular guest on our show so you can tell our listeners week to week exactly what is going on there, because that's one of the things that make our show unique is we like to let people know what exactly is happening. And that's not always easy to do in the swamp. Once you get there, you're going to find out if you think it's swampy now, wait till you get there, man. It's unbelievable what you're going to run into, the lobbyists that come into your office every day and everything else that goes on. But we look forward to you being there. If I may, can I digress here, get to your house race? There's, what, five or six people competing now in a special election in order to replace Ben Klein in the House of Delegates in Virginia. Anybody in there that you have backed or that you like or that you would like to see win, or are you staying out of it?
I'm staying out of it. You know, we've got several good candidates who are smart and would do the region proud if elected. I think there are some who have not been as involved in politics, and so you got to ask some questions about their positions on the issues. And those, I know we're having there's going to be a forum on Wednesday night in Buena Vista, and it's going to be at the VFW Hall and at 7 o'clock. So I think it's going to be broadcast on the internet, and so I would encourage folks, if they're listening in my region, to go ahead and listen in, because I think we'll learn some things about where the candidates stand on the issues and what their backgrounds are. They've got very diverse backgrounds, and who would best serve the 24th district, because the 24th is made up of very involved constituents. They want their delegate to get in there and mix it up. So hopefully they will choose someone who does.
Congressman Lick Klein, I'm not that familiar with the 24th district geographically. Buena Vista, is that a central point of the district?
It is. It's shaped like a cross, and it's in the southern part of the Shenandoah Valley. So you've got Bath County with the Homestead on the west side, Rockbridge in the middle, Augusta, just the southern tip of Augusta to the north, and then Amherst east over the Blue Ridge. So Buena Vista is right in the middle, right next to 81.
All right, so I should probably go down there right on Wednesday and see if I can carry that forum live on the radio so everybody has an opportunity to get access to these candidates, right?
You would be first in line and get the best seat in the house. I'll see to it.
All right, I'll do that. When we get off air, just tell me who with the VFW to call, and I will try to set that up today. And probably what we'll do is, if that's Wednesday night, right, we'll probably do our show then down there the following day, somewhere in the middle of the district, get some of the candidates on so we can shed as much transparency to the special election. When is it? The speaker called for it mid-December?
The actual election between the Republican nominee and the Democrat is December 18th. That's the week, the Tuesday before Christmas. Christmas is on Tuesday. And but the firehouse primary is this Saturday. So they're moving fast. Voters have less than a week to figure out their candidates. We just had one enter the race over the weekend. So, a week-long firehouse primary is a little too short in my view, but I'm not making the rules. So, we'll see how it goes, and hopefully the voters will be fully informed.
All right, so we understand for the 24th district, there is a Republican and Democratic, I guess, right? A firehouse primary, which means, so that everybody knows what a firehouse primary is. That isn't like every precinct, there's only select precincts you can turn out and vote, and it's within a certain period of time. What's the time like?
11 to 4.
11 to 4. So if you come at 10, it's too early. You come at 5, too late. So 11 to 4, you have to find what the polling place is. That will then select two nominees, and then they will square off in the actual election on December 18th. And then the election is like normal. It's a special, but it's all of the precincts within that area, and they'll be open from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., like always. But first, they have to do selections, and the Republican selection and the Democrat for their nominees will be on Saturday this week. So I'm going to do that for them. We can talk on that offline after that. Now, you go for your orientation this week, as I understand it,
Ben? That's right. That's right. We're packing up to go this week to orientation, and I think I've got my high waders packed to it for the swamp, and we'll be get our first introduction to how bad it's going to be.
Well, I know you stand tall, and like I didn't really understand it until I was up there every day. That's where I live during the week, and until you're there and you're in it, you don't really understand how much money is involved and how Wall Street's influence is. I mean, it's incredible, but you'll find out, and I'm sure after you've figured out, you'll stand firm just like you always do. Congressman-elect Ben Klein, really thanks for being with us. Happy Veterans Day. We look forward to having you on every week, and I'll definitely be there on Wednesday.
John, thanks. Look forward to it.
All right. Congressman-elect Ben Klein, going to Washington, going to fight the swamp. Joining us now, Katie Brown, and Katie is one of several candidates, I think five or six. Katie will have to tell me the number, running for the House of Delegates in a special election that has been set by Speaker Kirk Cox for December. And this is for the seat of Ben Klein, the 24th district. Ben Klein winning election to Congress. That seat opens up. So here's how it works. On Saturday, there's a firehouse primary for Republicans and for Democrats. So they'll elect their respective nominees on Saturday in a firehouse primary. And then the special will be in December. And in these specials, you never know who's going to turn out. The Democrats are very motivated. So I think it's a toss-up. I mean, it's a Republican area, but who knows? Anyway, there's a forum tonight at the VFW Hall in Buena Vista at 7 o'clock. You can join us there live if you're in the area. Or you can catch all the action right here on a special edition of the John Fredericks Radio Network, which will be on our website, johnfredericksradio.com, on our app, and also carried live on WJFN Radio, WJFN 100.5 FM, and 100.5JFNRadio.com. So there's all ways to access it. We're going to carry the forum live. We'll be on the air at 6 in Buena Vista. Joining us now, Katie Brown. Good to have you, Katie.
Thanks, John. It's great to be with you.
All right, so everybody knows Katie is the daughter of longtime House of Delegates member Terry Austin in Southwest Virginia. Katie, why are you in this race?
Well, John, that's a great question. For 15 years, I've worked as an elementary teacher for Rockbridge County Schools, and now I'm currently serving as the vice president of the PTA. While educating children in the classroom, my husband Stuart and I have been raising our own three children, Jack, Ella Kate, and Addie. And last year, I was given an amazing opportunity to take ownership of our family's electrical contracting business that my parents started when I was a baby. As a former educator, mother, and a small business owner, I faced a variety of challenges. And I think those challenges have prepared me to become the next delegate for Virginia's 24th district.
So let's say you get in the House and you win this special and you go in there in January. What is it that you want to do?
Well, first, there's several things I'd like to achieve, John. I'd like to lower taxes. Education is extremely important to me. That's where I've been for 15 years in those trenches. So I want to work on the education system. I want to remove some bureaucracy. I want to make sure that those teachers that are still in those trenches are getting the raises they need without raising taxes. I want to bring jobs to our region, and I definitely am interested in upholding those family values that I'm working so hard to raise my children with.
So when you say family values, like give me an example of how that would translate into legislation.
Well, keeping our family together, balancing that the mother and the campaign has been really interesting for me. I was just cleaning the kitchen and loading the dishwasher before I talked to you. Mm-hmm. So finding that groove and getting in it and continuing to keep my family foremost and hoping that other people are doing the same.
All right, let's get to a couple of specific issues. If you were elected to the House of Delegates, let me just get you a couple of specific issues. Let's go to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Are you in favor mm-hmm. of that or not?
Well, I oppose the construction, but primarily due to the eminent domain issues. You know, it's a FERC issue, a Federal Energy Regulatory Commission issue, but eminent domain is where the state comes into it. So I think that the government shouldn't be allowed to take any land from private citizens. Property rights are foundational to our Constitution, and the government overreach has to be watched closely.
If you were in the House of Delegates last session, would you have voted for Medicaid expansion. Katie, yes or no?
I have some concerns about Medicaid expansion. I think that increasing government-funded services is always a tax increase or burden. I think it's time now to focus on the restrictions for Medicaid expansion, such as the work requirements that need to be enforced.
So do you have any specific ideas how you might do that, Katie?
I don't. I'm open to some innovative, I feel strongly, John, that my generation is the lost generation of Republicans. And I think that you've talked a lot about that this morning, but I feel like I'm open to innovation and listening to those concerns and all sides and trying to figure out a way to solve that problem and to work on those restrictions.
Katie, how are you going to get broadband internet access to rural Southwest Virginians that don't have access to that?
Oh, that's a great question. I know it's a hot topic right now. I need to hear all the different areas and ways that we can get that here. So I need to hear all those ideas and decide what's best for our area.
So how many women Republican House members are there?
That's my favorite question to answer, John. Thank you so much. We didn't even plan that. There are 5 Republican women in the caucus, and it is 2018. So I feel strongly, John, and you know this from talking about Barbara Comstock this morning when I was listening to you, that women bring a different perspective on every single issue. And it's different. It's different than the Republican standard that we're used to. And I think, being a mom and a teacher and, running a mom campaign and a small business owner, my perspective and women's perspectives all over are extremely different on every issue.
Kind of like Emily Brewer in Suffolk that got elected. I thought she really brought a fresh perspective into the Republican caucus. Katie, without asking you your age, are you considered to be a millennial?
I am, John, and millennials are the fastest growing group of voters in our country. And I really hope to continue this trend by being a fresh voice with a new perspective. Actually, in our own Firehouse primary that we're having on Saturday, I am elated with the fact that a lot of millennials are going to come out. People that typically would never vote in a Firehouse primary are going to show up on Saturday and vote to put a fresh new perspective, hopefully, into the House of Delegates.
I'm chatting with Katie Brown. She is one of 4 Republicans vying for the Republican nomination, which will be determined on Saturday for the House District 24 seat. Mm-hmm. In the Lynchburg area, and that is the seat of Ben Klein, who got elected to Congress. So there'll be a Firehouse primary on Saturday determining who the Republican and Democratic nominees are. Katie Brown, one of 4 candidates. She's the daughter of House of Delegates member Terry Austin. And we will be carrying their forum live tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. across our app, our online, our network, and live on WJFN Radio 100.5 FM. In the Central Virginia area and also in Lynchburg. So, look, Katie, why should Republicans in the 24th district vote for you and not one of the other candidates? What separates you out? Don't give me style. Give me positions on issues.
First, I'm a political outsider. I've never held a political office before. Again, we talked about, millennials, the fastest growing group of voters. The average age of Virginia House of Delegates in the Virginia House of Delegates is 52 years old. I'm a small business owner, a teacher, a mom, a different perspective, new ideas, lots of energy. I'm running circles around my 3 opponents. I'm juggling it all, and I'll continue to do that and juggle all of the facets that I can in Richmond. So I'm excited and ready, and I think it's time to change the game a little bit.
If you keep going down the same path, you end up in the same place. That was my message today.
Exactly right.
You keep nominating whack job candidates like Corey Stewart, you're going to end up on the bottom of the barrel. Kirk Cox is the last line of defense. He goes down, it's over. You'll never win an election in Virginia in your generation again. Katie, we need new people and we need new blood. Good luck.
Yes. Thank you.
I'll see you tonight.
Talk radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM. WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. U.S. agents have shot several rounds of tear gas at hundreds of migrants approaching the U.S. border from Mexico after several tried to make it past fencing and wire separating the two countries. Mexico's Interior Ministry said in a statement Sunday that it would immediately deport those who tried to cross into the U.S. and that it would reinforce the border. House Democrats set to vote this week on whether to nominate Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi for Speaker in the upcoming Congress. Those Democrats opposing her hoping that a strategy of chaos will help them win out in the end. At present, no one has come forward as an alternative. Those against Pelosi believe that a show of opposition, even without a rival candidate, will be enough to prove that she can't win the House-wide vote in January and prompt alternatives to challenge her. More details at srnnews.com.
Internal Revenue Service. When you owe a personal or business tax debt and can't pay, just hearing those three words brings feelings of fear and anxiety. I'm Jonathan David Suryash, Managing Tax Attorney at J. David Tax Law. Everyone knows that if you owe the IRS and don't pay, it's only a matter of time before tax liens, wage garnishments, or bank levies happen to you. The first step to resolution is our no-cost consultation. We take the time to go through your specific tax problem step by step. We explain exactly what your options are and how we will resolve your tax issue. J. David Tax Law is a local firm right here in Jacksonville, where only an experienced tax attorney will represent you. Our fee payment plans are affordable for everyone. If you have tax problems, call us now for a no-cost consultation at 904-507-4777. That's 904-507-4777, or find us on the web at jdavidtaxlaw.com. That's jdavidtaxlaw.com. Peace of mind is only a click or phone call away.
Do you know who was voted the Bold City's best plumber? Roland Reisch Plumbing. Here's why. Roland Reisch Plumbing promises great work on time and does it. The good news spreads fast. For all plumbing issues, large or small, you want the Bold City's best. Click Plumber in Jax.com. Your friends and neighbors have used them. And that's why they went to Jacksonville.com to vote Roland Reisch Plumbing Jacksonville's top plumber. 24/7, Roland Reisch Plumbing is standing by, whether it's routine work or a middle-of-the-night emergency. Just call 904-260-7059. If you have a leak, can't wait a week, please call Roland Reisch Plumbing at 904-260-7059. Roland Reisch Plumbing is proud to have been voted Bold City's best plumber. They intend to stay number one. Call 904-260-7059. Call 904-260-7059.
Here's your community calendar from WBOB.
Thursday, November 29th at 8 p.m., it's Dave Koz in concert at the Florida Theater in downtown Jacksonville. Friday, November 30th at 7 p.m., enjoy the Harlem Globetrotters at Veterans Memorial Arena. And Friday, November 30th through Sunday, December 2nd, the Jacksonville Symphony presents A French Fantasy at Jacoby Symphony Hall. Check online for daily showtimes.
For more information or to have your event included, visit WBOB.com.
The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
Joining us now, the Godfather, Senate minority, soon, in my opinion, to be the majority leader of the state Senate in Virginia, the Commonwealth, Minority Leader Dick Saslaw. Godfather, good to have you with us.
John, it's good to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Okay, lots to talk about today, Senator. Let's start at the top. Let's start with the election this past November. The Democrats gaining three seats in the United States Congress. Now, the Democrats in Virginia controlling seven of 11 congressional seats.
You know, prior to the 2016 election, it was 8-3 the other way.
8-3, now 7-4 Democrats. They control both U.S. senators. They control all three state constitutional offices. So the Republicans basically dwindling here down to almost nonentity. Now, Let's go to the 2019 Senate election, of which I'm predicting you're going to be the majority leader. I know my lips to God's ears. The Republicans, Republicans have to defend the Sturdivant seat. Very difficult to do. They have to defend the Dick Black seat. Dick Black is not going to win. They have to defend the Bryce Reeves seat. That's three. They have to defend the Siobhan Dunovit seat. That's four. And if Frank Wagner retires, you're going to win that seat. So you got five seats that you can win. The Republicans have zero chance for picking up anything. So, you know, one of my best friends in the world is Senator Bill Stanley. And I've told him over and over to be very nice to you over the next 12 months. Dick, what do you think?
Well, Bill and I have a good friendship, you know, anyway. I really do. And it's just, you know, these are unusual times. And, you know, I'd be less than honest if I didn't say that the bulk of this is all being driven from across the Potomac River.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing in the Post today, apparently President Trump's gotten himself into a war with a retired Navy admiral who I guess was the one in charge of the Navy SEAL team that found and disposed of Bin Laden. And he criticized him for not having done it sooner. You know, these things are just so unnecessary. And it may sell, you know, in certain parts of the state and certain parts of America. But by and large, in this 95-64 corridor, it doesn't.
Right.
If you take a look at that corridor, that's virtually where all of the Democratic, you know, pickups have been, with the exception of, you know, maybe the Blacksburg area.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all the pickups are, because it's what has become our urban corridor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only going to become more urban, you know, and that'll spread.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a look at what used to be called Northern Virginia, it stopped at the Occoquan. Now, essentially, it's going all the way to Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only a question of time before that changes, and it's moving out the valley, out I-66.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it didn't have to be that way, but that seems to be the way, you know, it's all headed. And I don't, you know, we used to have a Congress that worked, and now we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been knocking on doors since last May, John, and all I hear from people, even from, you know, very, very progressive Democrats, is that, you know, we need people who can work across party lines and make this whole thing work.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't seem to be the mood of, definitely didn't seem to be the mood of a lot of people in the Republican Party and some people in our party. I mean, everybody says, you know, we need to do this and there's no negotiation. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are right now, at this point in history. Maybe it'll change.
If you look back at the 2018 General Assembly, you negotiated with Republicans. You got Medicaid expansion done.
Right.
It didn't take a my way or the highway attitude, either to the speaker. And by the way, I've been saying in Virginia that Speaker Cox is basically the last possible firewall for Virginia Republicans, because if the Democrats take the House in 19, and I think that's a little bit tougher than the Senate. The Senate, the Republicans have maybe a 15% chance of holding it, in my view. The House may be 50-50, because there's a couple seats the Republicans actually could pick up. Some are at risk. But if Kirk Cox goes, and I'm just asking you this not as the Democratic leader, but as just a pundit reality, if Cox goes, the Republicans will have no ability to raise any money for any future campaign in Virginia. I mean, Kirk's it. If he goes, there's going to be Democratic majorities in both houses as long as I'm alive, I believe.
Well, you know, to begin with, you have to take a look at the business community. I mean, I've seen, I don't want to get into names because it's just not necessary, but I've seen notable shifts in the business community with respect to their giving. And it has a lot to do with where they would like to see the country headed. And, you know, to sit there and base your whole energy program on coal's coming back when you know it's not coming back. You know, just doesn't make any sense. They see our party, as at least my interpretation of all, they see our party as the party that can possibly put this whole thing back together again. And that's what it's going to take. Is something like, you know, like that. That, you know, as I pointed out, story in the Post today, there was another one today that apparently there's a widening rift between the White House and the military. And, you know, it's just, we've never had this before. You know, you just, we just never had this, and you're beginning to see the results of this. And it's all it's done is just led to a highly polarized country that doesn't seem to be capable of getting its act together. And you take a look at the comments made by our allies overseas. They are not one bit happy with what they see going on over here.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, what I don't want to see is them just say, well, we'll wing it without the United States. You know, that just shouldn't be, and we shouldn't allow it.
Well, look, Godfather, we can fundamentally agree to disagree on that.
Sure.
I think I really, as you know, I'm a true believer in President Trump and his America First policies. And he's finally holding allies accountable for ripping us off for decade after decade and cheating us and taking our manufacturing jobs away. So we can debate that. He's also the great disruptor of our time, and he's challenging military orthodoxy, the military-industrial complex, why we're involved in Yemen, why we're involved in protecting the world without any getting any resources back. So we can debate that. But I want to get back to Virginia. And the reason Virginia businesses are giving money to Democrats is because they're going to win. I mean, that's why you're getting the money. It's because you're going to win. Everybody sees the handwriting on the wall. Look at District 33. And by the way, let's congratulate House of Delegates member Jennifer Plisco for winning her District 33 firehouse primary. She'll be the favorite to replace Jennifer Wexton. Big win there. We had her on our show on Friday. And see, to me,
Kane carried that. I think Kane carried that District 67 to 32.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's she is going to win easy. But two things I want to mention.
Sure.
When you look at Jennifer, you say, okay, there's a progressive. I mean, she was part of the movement, run everywhere and challenge everybody. She is a progressive, but she's a different type of a progressive in that she will talk to Republicans, try to get a deal done, work across the aisle. The people running in opposition to her were the exact opposite. They said, we're not going to make any deals, et cetera, and she won easy. But this is how far the Republican Party has fallen in Northern Virginia. When that was a special election for Wexton, in 2000, whenever it was, 15,
right,
I believe.
13 or 14.
Yeah, 14. John Whitbeck won a very contentious convention. Thousands of people showed up. He was able to be the nominee, and they actually thought they could win, and they spent money. He got beat handily, but they thought they had a shot to win that. Juxtapose that to now, where the Republicans nominated a candidate last evening in an open mass meeting. They nominated Joe May, moderate, but there was a total, Dick, of 68 votes. 68 votes.
My understanding was there were 2,500 voted in that Democratic firehouse primary.
Yep.
And it's just, I was kind of shocked. As you know, 2 weeks ago, Joe voted in Dick Black's district. Voted in Dick Black's district. Or was registered to vote there.
I guess he changed his.
My understanding was he bought a place last week.
Well, I'd say his campaign was about a day and a half. But regardless of that, the total participation to nominate a Senate candidate in a special election was 68 voters. 68 compared to the Democrats who had a firehouse primary and had 2,700. 68 voters chose Joe May as a nominee. He won 35-33. I mean, it's just mind-boggling how far the Republicans have fallen. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Truck the Truth Across America. We're with the Godfather, Minority Leader of the Senate in Virginia, Dick Sazlaw, getting ready for the session coming up in 2019. And we have him as the overwhelming favorite to be the majority leader after the November elections. The math doesn't work for Republicans at all. I want to get to Ken Cuccinelli for a minute. Now, I'm not a fan of his. And as you know, Senator, Ken and I have been at odds for a very long time, basically since 2013, when I felt he stole the nomination process from the Lieutenant Governor, Bill Bowling. And I thought, had there been a primary and Bowling won, the whole thing would have been different. But that's just me. He has an op-ed the other day, about a couple weeks ago, in the Washington Post, basically blasting the Atlantic Coast Pipeline and saying that there's some kind of an unholy alliance between state house leaders and Dominion Energy to get the pipeline, aiming it basically at yourself and some others that believe that the negotiations with Dominion were fair and equitable. How do you respond to that?
Well, to begin with, first of all, Dominion didn't consult with me. I didn't even know about the pipeline until long after it was under construction or completed in West Virginia and it was coming into Virginia. The other thing I remember, you know, Governor McCall remarked that he couldn't get, and I'll get back to, you know, FERC's involvement, that he and I suspect it's been no different with Governor Northam, they can't get any large companies to go south of I-64. West of Richmond, because there's no energy.
Right.
And apparently one guy that was prepared to build a major facility, start off hiring more than 1,000 people down in Southside, he just finally said to the governor, he says, what am I supposed to do, shut my plant when the sun doesn't shine or the wind doesn't blow? He says, I can't do that. Call me when you have some natural gas. And they don't have any. And, you know, I'm on that oversight committee, and every time there's a meeting, people show up complaining about the rates that they have to pay Appalachian, you know, power, or not the rates, but the, because the electric rates in Virginia are amongst the cheapest on the East Coast. I think on North Carolina has cheaper rates, but they have to heat their house with electricity because they don't have natural gas down there. So, FERC, and by the way, the decision on that, the major decision is made by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The General Assembly has nothing to do with that.
Right.
I mean, it's just sheer nonsense. The other thing was he took a filing of, I think, it may have been the Southern Poverty Law Center or the Southern Environmental Law Center, I can't remember which one, and they had said that it would run from 1.6 to 2.3 billion. He rounded it. He didn't take the bottom number. He rounded to 2.3 up to 2.5. And if you distribute, you know, take a look at all of, and I can't speak for Appalachian power, but if you looked at Dominion's 2.7 million customers and you divide that. And he said over 20, you know, it was over 20 years, it comes to about $3 to $4 a month per customer.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you take the bottom number, it comes to about $1.15 or $1.20 a month or a cup of coffee at McDonald's once a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the cost is.
Of the pipeline.
And for the pipeline. And, you know, to say that somehow or other we're the driving force beyond that is just sheer nonsense. You can't build these things without the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission signing off on them. And you have to show a need. And my understanding is, at least with the Atlantic Coast pipeline, 35% of that gas will stay in Virginia. So, I mean, the article that he wrote was absolute nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't even come close to resembling the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not an uncommon thing when you're dealing with Ken Cuccinelli, as I found. He puts in his article, he says, how will this go forward? Look for the following pro-Dominion cronyist legislation in the Virginia General Assembly that effectively orders the State Corporation Commission to charge Dominion's customers the full cost of the pipeline. So as you mentioned, the full cost of this is going to be about $1.25 a month, which is, like you said, a cup of coffee once a month at McDonald's. But when he talks about cronyist legislation, I mean, look, I follow the General Assembly as well as anybody, and they have their lobbyists, but it seems to me
there's been no pipe. The only pipeline or legislation that I can see has been put in by that guy Rasool, and that's essentially been it.
Right.
I mean, we don't put in bills, you know, saying build the pipeline or don't build the pipeline. At least I haven't seen any in the Senate.
Right.
In bills that provide for more oversight, and I voted for those bills.
Right.
You know, I don't have a problem with that. But we don't just gin up legislation saying, hey, go build a pipeline. And I mean, that's absurd.
Well, it's not coming from the General Assembly. That's the bottom line. And when you talk about cronyist legislation, I mean, the last two big deals that got made, the first one was the negotiation of the rate freeze that was negotiated by Republican Frank Wagner, head of the Commerce Committee in Virginia Beach. And that basically he did that to give rate certainty to people. Now, that's been criticized because the Obama EPA plan didn't go forward. At the time, I favored Wagner's compromise because no one knew what the future was going to hold.
No.
And I thought
it's since been repealed and
right.
replaced with 966.
Right.
Senate Bill 966, which Frank and I, you know, sponsored. And what that bill is going to do is going to require Dominion to have 5,000 megawatts of solar and wind. It would be mostly solar by 2028, which will put them in the top five of the country in solar, and on a sunny day, will power approximately 47% of all Dominion residences. And Dominion pretty much is on target to finish do that well ahead of 2028, from what I've been told.
Well, what their goal is right now is to have 15% average renewable energy. That's average. By 2025, they're well ahead of that. And as you said, on sunny days, you know, some days there isn't any sun, there isn't any wind, you'll be at 1%. And other days, you could be at 47%. So they're making the investment there, and they're doing it in an efficient way. But the bottom line is, when you look at Cuccinelli's op-ed, it's full of falsehoods and lies. And that's the bottom line. And when Dominion has had a windfall, the legislature has come together, like you did with 966, and re-regulate that down, and you got a lot of concessions. So
in that bill, I think they had to fork up $170 million. They will be the only 2 years they wouldn't have been reviewed. And it was interesting, the people who opposed the pipeline, I saw numbers that Dominion supposedly earned in those 2 years that would equal their total profit for about the last two or three decades.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was just absurd what got floated out there. And on top of that, as a result of the Trump tax cut, which is $120-some million a year, Dominion, that money all has to be wrote in the bill. That's got to be refunded to the ratepayer.
Right,
payer.
Right.
And the thing on somehow or other, forego refunds on over-earnings if they invest that money in renewables, two observations. Number one, that money cannot be used in their asset base to get a return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, the biggest over-earning year they had since we re-regulated them in 2007, or the biggest 2 years, was 2009 and 10, when they were reviewed in 2011 for 9 and 10. And they had over-earned, I think it was $79 million. And it came over a six-month period to about $2.84 a month for the average customer. Well, at $2.84 a month, let's face it, we're not going to create Warren Buffett's. And the question is there a better use for the money? And collectively, to put the money in renewables would make more sense. And like I said, that money, though, that is used for that cannot go into their asset base. So, the bill Just to give you an idea, Fairfax, Arlington, Alexandria, Falls Church, and the city, the cities of Falls Church and Fairfax City have 19 delegates. 18 of them are Democrats. Of the 18 Democrats, 15 of the 18 voted for the bill. 16 of the total 19 voted for it. Of the 9 senators that represent the same 3 jurisdictions, 6 of the 9 voted for it. So the bill was needed. The bill was good, or it wouldn't have had that kind of support. In fact, more Republicans in the Senate voted against it than Democrats.
Right. All right. I'm almost out of time, Mr. Minority Leader Dick Sazzle. I got one more question. There's this dark money company called Clean Virginia. And what type of an influence are they having? They trash Dominion every day. Is this kind of a thing fair? Like, we don't really know where the money is coming from.
It is a dark money company, but you know, it's you got free speech in this country, and they don't want to. You know, it's pretty hard to figure out where the money does come from, but. You know, you take a look at the Boisco election, and while there was more to it than just this, and I'll readily concede that, somebody told me there was an article put out in this Blue Virginia blog in which essentially set this up as a contest between pro-pipeline and anti-pipeline people. And if that's the case, 80% of the people, if you buy into that, you know, are obviously are pro-pipeline, which probably not accurate, you know. But, I mean, it's just not the issue up here that people believe it is.
Well,
so, I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, it's just they're constantly bashing. I've hit on over 5,000 doors, okay, and it's come up at 2 doors.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Mm-hmm.
At 2 doors out of over 51-something. 100-something, and that's all.
Well, look, the blog Blue Virginia set it up as the, you know, pipeline versus no pipeline when they endorsed the candidate opposing Jennifer, and she got 80% of the vote. So you got to be accountable for that, right? Didn't she get something like 80%, something like,
she
like
got that? Yeah, she got, it was 80 or 82%.
Yeah, she got over 80%, so that tells you what influence Blue Virginia has in Democratic primaries.
The only thing, John, that Blue Virginia, or people that write, some of the people that write on, the only thing they have been blaming me for is the sinking of the Lusitania, the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and the California wildfires. They blame me for everything else.
Well, you're also to blame for the Redskins' loss on Sunday to the Texans.
I was there yesterday.
You're the blame. Had you not gone, that 70-yard field, that 65-yard field goal would have made it, or
why
actually
did not get that strategy. Why didn't he? He could have tried it down and out. Colt McCoy is a good quarterback, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, is it?
He could have tried it down and out. That would have only consumed 4 seconds had he completed it. And then with a down and out out of bounds, that field goal could have possibly been 20, 30 yards closer.
Even on the third down play, even had they gone over the middle, they had like 15 seconds. Even had they gone over the 14 seconds. Even had they gone over the middle and got a first down there, and he got 15 yards and was tackled, they would have had enough time to spike the ball and set a field goal up that was more makeable and win the game. Dick, we're out of time. I want to thank State Senator Dick Sazlow.
Thank you, John. Say hello to Ann and your family.